Two fat expats, where did our gin go? Lost it in the duty free, or left it on the carousel? Uh-oh, uh-oh.
For anyone that doesn't know, that's supposed to be Diana Ross.
Do we just fess up that we only work out what these songs are literally 30 seconds before we start?
Yeah, we used to be really, really good and, like, have a list of songs that we were going to sing. And now it's just as we hit record, oh, what's our song this week?
And, you know, I forgot, because what we were going to do is at our morning tea last week is record people saying Two Fat Expats.
Yeah, but
I completely forgot.
Yeah, I've just remembered now that you've reminded me.
Did you have fun at the morning tea?
I did. It was so nice to meet so many lovely ladies. So thank you, everyone, for coming and supporting us.
It was excellent.
It was a really lovely morning.
Yeah. And favourite food, favourite drink?
Oh, I think I smashed about 10 deviled eggs.
They were really good.
And there was this other eclair that had, like, edible flowers and gold leaf on them. Mm-hmm. They were amazing.
And then they had, and this was, of course, all thanks to the Shangri-La Hotel. And do you know, a girlfriend of mine has rang the Shangri-La this week to use them for outside catering.
Oh, wow.
And I hadn't even thought about that, that because they're not open yet, but we're hoping they'll be open in December.
Yes.
But she said, well, this might be a good chance to get them to come to the house because there to have, you know, people free and available. So she's booked them for, like,
how
a morning
fancy.
Tea. I know, because that was fancy, wasn't
it?
I mean,
that was swanky.
I would like to have them every day. I would like to have that coffee
I would
machine.
Like to walk into my house and have it look like the Shangri-La threw up all over it.
Because we had those spa ladies.
Oh.
And they were doing, like, the head massages. Yep. I have to say, I was too scared to let them do the head massage because I thought they'd take out clumps of my hair.
I was too scared to let them touch my hair only because with short hair, I don't let anyone near my hair. So as she started to go into my hair,
you said, stop,
I did that.
That.
And I froze and I went, I'm really sorry, but I'm really vain and I don't let people touch my hair. I'm really sorry.
Yeah, well, mine was just more, I was beginning to molt just a little bit and I was thinking that poor lady's going to go in and come out because it is, for those who haven't seen, my hair is just about all out, but I've got a bit left. But
she's rocking a fabulous scarf today, everyone, a fabulous scarf.
I do have the headscarf. I'll have to post a pic later. But to me, it feels like I have smothered my hands with Nair, you know, that hair remover, because every time I run my hands through my hair, it's like I just bring out clumps and clumps and clumps.
Wow.
So yesterday it was still looking reasonably normal.
Yeah.
But I knew because we had a really busy day yesterday with kids with rugby and kids with softball. And at one stage, Henry and I sat down at volleyball and we were sitting in these bleachers.
Mm.
And, you know, you can just feel behind you when people are kind of looking at you. And I was thinking it was like I could just wipe off my hair from my head as I was sitting there. And I was thinking, oh, God, this is like it was all over my shoulders.
Yeah.
It was over my neck.
And people probably think, well, what is going on with that woman's
like
hair?
I just had a haircut without a cape.
Yeah.
And then so when we got home and we'd had dinner and everything, I said to G, I'm going to go and wash my hair now and I'm pretty sure that when I do, I'm not going to have a lot of hair left. And he was like, oh, okay. And as I was washing it, it was just
falling out.
Oh, in just mops and mops of it,
wow.
Like just piles and piles.
And what's the feeling like? Is it almost a little bit relief because now it's happening? Or is it a sense of dread? Like, what do you feel when it's happening?
It was awful because it looked awful.
Yeah.
A sense of relief of, okay, well,
it started
we're
now.
Doing it now.
Yeah.
Also, a sense, I would say to anyone, I had my hair cut really short on the sides and I kept a long bit on top.
Mm-hmm.
The short on the sides has all stayed and the long on the top is where it's all come out in big clumpy patches.
Yeah.
So I guess a bit of advice from this end is I would say get your hair cut in an absolute a buzz
go
cut as much as you can.
Yep.
Like get it as short
the
as short as short.
The pixie extreme.
Yeah, like the pixie extreme because it seems that that bit, it seems like the more weight in your hair, the more it's just going to come out in a big clump.
Okay.
So, you know, we're having a good look at it because I seriously have big patches of bald now on the top of my head.
Yeah.
But all on the sides, it's all still there. So
wow.
I actually am going to look like a middle-aged man that has no hair on top. Oh, God. Oh, well, but that's it, right? That's
You're getting better.
I'm getting better.
It will grow back.
It will.
And we've discovered that you look really good with short hair.
Yes.
That would never have happened
that
had
was
you
a
not.
Bonus, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, you look good with short hair.
All right, done.
Thanks, Cancer.
Okay, so Stairs, when we were at the morning tea last week, meeting all the really lovely people, we came up with lots of ideas, like episode ideas.
Yeah, and people had some suggestions for us.
They
and,
did,
yeah,
which was really, really good. And one of them was I was speaking to this really gorgeous woman called Tash, and she was telling me, she's Australian, and she was telling me how she has a son with special needs, because the whole schooling thing came up, as it always does in the expat world. And it was amazing because it was like there was this parallel universe going on. Next to me on one side was two women having exactly the conversation we've all heard before, where one person's talking about they think one school is better and someone else is talking about they think another school is better. And it was that whole conversation of, you know, well, why do you think that's better and why do you think that's better and blah, 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 blah. And I sort of turned to talk to this woman to sort of get out of
away
the conversation.
From it,
and I... said to her, oh, well, what about you? Are your children at either of those schools? And she said, no, you know, I have a child with special needs. And she said, so schooling's a whole different thing for us. And I was immediately fascinated because I just thought, what we'll worry about when we move and what a family with a special needs child has to worry about is so different.
Absolutely.
And
it's a whole other kettle of fish.
It really is.
And I think with special needs, that's such a broad category as well. You know, you can have children with a hearing impairment or vision impairment. They're considered special needs.
Yes.
You know, you've got children that might have a physical disability. They're in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
That's special needs.
Yeah.
And they even consider children who are gifted a special needs.
Yes.
So there's just such a broad category for special needs that...
And do you think it's fair to say, says that international schools just do not cope with special needs
at all? No, they don't.
They're terrible, aren't they?
Yep. And apparently one of the articles that we'll talk a little bit further on in the episode, one woman said the international schools, they're not regular, they don't have to have a special needs program.
No, they don't. And particularly these schools don't need to because they're rolling, and I'm going to say they are rolling in cash and enrolments and have waiting lists a mile long. And so... there is no incentive for them.
That's right. I've always said, I worked in a school here in Doha, and the principal of that school was trying to build a special needs program, and she got a lot of kickback from it, from the owners of the school that didn't want anything that wasn't the norm.
Yeah.
And I don't know where it's gone now. When I was working there, they did hire a woman who was special needs trained.
Yeah.
So they were starting the program. I don't know where it's gone to now. But I've always, to me, in my experience with schools here, it's almost like if you've got that average kid, they're going to do okay.
Yes.
But any kid that's gifted or any kid that has special needs, it would be a big decision to come to school in Doha, I would think.
Yeah.
You know, I think the schools here are great for that average run-of-the-mill kid. But I think anything else... other than that.
Yeah. And you know, I think it's such a shame because our children could all benefit from being around more children with special needs.
Absolutely.
One of the points one of the women made in the interview was, you know, it's not real life. If you don't have special needs people in the school, that's not real life. And
I've had a girlfriend who's recently moved back to the UK because her child was incredibly gifted and there was nothing here for him.
Yeah.
He was labelled as he had behavioural problems, he had this, this and that. He didn't.
Right.
He wasn't being challenged at school.
Yes.
So they've gone back to the UK.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's kick off with Tash and Kelly. And I started off by asking Tash to tell me a bit about her expat life and how they came to be in the expat world and what their family looked like.
So we started in Abu Dhabi. Was our first expat experience. So we moved there with two young boys. Jasper was just a baby. We had a wonderful 3.5 to 4 years in Abu Dhabi, but decided to move back to Australia to sort of access services for JASFAC. So Abu Dhabi was 9 years ago
right.
when we were there. And
so how many children do you have?
So I've got two boys. I've got Harry's 13, Jasper's 9. And for Jasper, there just wasn't any... wasn't really any preschool or sort of early intervention services available in Abu Dhabi back then.
When you arrived in Abu Dhabi with Jasper, did you know that Jasper was going to require special needs schooling, or was that something that came to you in your travels?
Yes, it's quite hard because he was a baby. We didn't really know what his... We had a diagnosis, but you don't really know what that's going to turn into. So you have a list, a gamut of possibilities, 50 possible things that can... go wrong, basically. So you don't really know what of those he will actually have, if you know what I mean. So we don't really know, we didn't know whether it would be just learning needs or whether it would be a major speech delay or, you know, whether it was major health problems. So we just sort of had to wing it, really, and just sort of go along, and each day we learnt more about him. So, yeah, so it's been a bit of a, I guess, just a learning experience, learning about him. And
were you continuing thinking, oh, it would be better if we were in Australia because we'd have this?
Yeah, I did sort of feel like that, because Harry was at a British school in Abu Dhabi and he did very well there, but I could just see the academics level there at that school. I just thought Jasper would be, he just would not cope. And they, you know, they're pushing the children quite early at such a young age. And, you know, I had Jasper still in nappies and not barely talking. I thought, how is this kid going to go along to KG2 when he's still in nappies? I just didn't see him fitting into that school system. Yeah. So it sort of made me, I really had to think about it. You know, we were very happy there, but we sort of had to make the decision to go back home just to access services for a few years so that we could... Because I needed some help as well, because there's nobody in the, when you're an expat, nobody's there to help you. Like when you're in your own home country, there are all these services in place and you just get into the system and they just organise everything for you.
Yeah.
So, you know, you go back home and they'll organise speech therapy, they'll organise OT, you'll have a psychologist, a, you know, paediatrician, and all that. They all talk together and it sort of just gives you a bit of support. So I found that, that was really useful.
Natasha, you met Kelly in Abu Dhabi. How did you guys meet? Oh, no, you didn't. You'd met before then.
We met in Australia. Briefly, and then I got a message from Tash through a friend sort of saying that they were thinking of moving overseas. So we met then.
Yeah.
And so I've got three children.
Yeah.
And so Isabel was only, 9 years ago, only seven. And we came over from Australia and she went into a special needs school because that was all that we could sort of, you know, find from Australia. It's really hard sort of preparing for schools because you can't actually, nobody can see your child to assess them or anything like that. Whereas, you know, you can do an assessment for the other kids, but for kids with special needs, it's, you know, you have to wait until you're actually here and go and see the school.
Yeah, and you want to feel for the school as well. Yeah. You don't want to just enrol them in a school.
So I guess what you mean with your other children, they could send through an assessment for them to do at the school when it was all about academics and whatever. But when you're arriving, you can't do that with special needs, no.
No. Even though Isabel having Down syndrome, it's, you know, there's a, you know, a certain, you know, expectation of what of her abilities at sort of different levels, but it's still going there. And though, you know, that 10 years ago or whatever was interesting. And I mean, I had quite a few people surprisingly say to me, well, why did you come? Why would you come with a child with special needs? And my thought and my husband's has always been, she's one of five, there's a family of five, we can't all just stop because of her. She's part of our family. And we're doing it for our family, so I'm always surprised. You know, people feel when they can ask us.
Oh yeah,
really,
it's also
personal.
Absolutely, and work is so much more global as well now. So you just have to go where work opportunities are. So you can't always just, you know, you don't always have the choice either. Sometimes you do have to just
go,
and you have to make the most of it.
Yeah, and I started traveling so young. I mean, I started when I left uni, so my first, like when I was 21, went to the year in London or whatever, and then went back, then went to the other, to Dubai, was there for 3 years, met my husband or whatever. So travel for me was a really big part, and to sort of think, I can't do it now.
Yeah.
Yes, because I've had this,
and just
because of
her,
this situation.
It was difficult for us.
And do you think it's a misconception too that that what you're going to get at home is going to be so much better than what you would get abroad?
Yeah, well, I think you get different things at home. Yes. You know, yeah, it's, I mean, you might get, you get different support and things like that, but you, what you get for living in a different country
is, that's right, you have to, that's right, you sort of see the benefits once you've lived in a different country, you see what they gain. For us, for Jasper, like at home, he wouldn't be playing necessarily in the neighbourhood. There aren't a lot of kids in a neighbourhood just to go and catch up with, whereas on a compound, there are kids every day. So Jasper's got a great social life. People are knocking at the door and he's running out. So he's got a lot of freedom, a lot of friends. He's having sleepovers, which he didn't have at home.
Because you've both of you have returned to Australia and done the Australian life and then chosen to go back and do the expat life. Can you explain that go again?
I think I just built up confidence. I think because Jasper was a baby, I didn't really know what to expect. So by going back home, I just got a few tools, knew what he needed, got to know him better.
Uh-huh.
So I just felt more confident coming that I could help him with whatever he needed.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I guess too, you had those people back in Australia to refer to.
That's
if
right.
You
and teachers
to.
Back in Australia have always said, just drop us an email if you need any help or if you're worried about something, just let us know. So I've built up a nice network back there. So I think I feel confident coming here because I know if something doesn't work, I'll find something that does.
Well, I think work-wise, for my husband, there was nothing, and he was very unhappy at work. And we found that wherever we were, he was travelling all the time. So he'd be away for 2 weeks, he'd come home for 4 days.
Uh-huh.
And with three, you know, teens or approaching teens, it was too hard. Too hard for me. And I thought, well, this, you know, I need him more around than that. And I think we've got to the stage now, Isabel is 16, so we came when she was nearly 15 or 14 or whatever, and we've realised that her education now is about living skills. It's
right.
Not about academics. It's not about going to school. It's more about her being able to look after herself, learn to make a few meals, be able to go to the shops. It's more, that's more the sort of things that she needs. And we can do that. And the school where she is, she can do that with them as well. So, I mean, our decision, it was based, you know, it was a family decision that we needed to do something so we could all be together, and this sort of worked the best for us.
So does it give you a cut-off point of when you have to go home, or do you think, no, you can just keep travelling?
Well, we're looking at... we've got Isabel's name down in, like, a semi-independent living housing arrangement for when she's 18 plus. So they're building places that... The first place is in Canberra, or in Australia, actually, or maybe even the world that they're doing, where she will actually be able to own, buy her own little studio apartment.
Wow.
Which will be sort of around a... like a whole living area, but there will be a carer on site, so there's always somebody there, but there'll be sort of, I think there's about nine little studio apartments where people, you know, adults with disabilities can live, and she'll actually own it, so it won't be a matter
financial
of
financial independence,
you know,
as well.
Oh, we're closing this now, you have to move off somewhere else. So for us, that's a huge relief, because we're sort of thinking, you know, she can be doing what she wants to do, supported, but having her life and being semi, you know, semi independent, and we can go back as often as we need to.
So
I mean, for us, that's been a huge relief, because that always was a huge worry. What are we going to do?
I think that's a big stress when you've got a child with special needs, is that financial independence, because you're looking at saving for your own retirement, but also to support another person in their independent living.
Yeah.
So it's quite a big financial. So I guess coming here also gives you that ability to save more and to set those sorts of things in place. So, you know, the realities are that if you're at home, you wouldn't be able to do that. So I think that's quite a big worry, because you don't want your child living in poverty either, because a lot of people with, you know, disabilities do actually live in poverty, below the poverty line.
What does your arriving in a new country look like that you think might be a bit different to someone that's not travelling with a child with special needs?
I think one of the main things is finding the doctor as well, because both of our children have heart problems, so they've had to have heart surgery. So finding, you know, so getting all of your reports, you know, and having travelled a lot, you know, trying to keep reports from everywhere. And then when the doctor says, so, you know, because Isabel had her first surgery at 3 months old, and of course we were in a bit of shock when it all happened, and he's like, so the surgery was this, can you explain it? And we're like, no.
It's a long time
three kids
ago.
I can't remember, you know, who did what at when, sort of thing. So I think, you know, something like that. I think the schooling is, I think I've realised this time around, you had to wait till you get here. We, in Abu Dhabi, we had her in a special school. It wasn't working so well, so I went to put her in mainstream school. But in those days, you had to pass the exam to go up to the next level. So the school would accept her in grade one, but because she couldn't pass the exam, we couldn't go to grade two. So for the 4 years that we were there, she was in school every year, a different school every year, because they would say, yes, we'll take her. until we finally got to a Canadian school and they said, no, that's fine. We will put her in a similar age group to her peers. So, she was still eight with year ones.
Yeah.
Because she couldn't academically go up to the next level. So that was very frustrating. Yeah. And then you also find the difference between what the other kids in the class and her socially were different.
Yeah.
So we didn't sort of find that the friendships were developing. And that was one of my major reasons for going back to Australia at that time, because it was too difficult.
Do you have like a support, an official support group here, or is it very unofficial and just getting together? How does that
very
work?
Very unofficial.
Unofficial. Kelly does actually run a coffee morning.
Yeah, I do with the Doha Mums have a group called Out of Sync. Mm. So it's for parents and with children with disabilities, and that we have, there are people who are doing things. There's a lovely lady through school, Isabel School Step by Step, Fahim, that's organising she organises baseball for the Challenger League, and she's organising swimming club that we do on a Saturday. So there are things, but it's difficult to find. We do the coffee mornings sort of once a month and generally fine. There's a few people that will come each month, but there's just people that will just come and sort of just need to know that it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, a lot of people are just turn up and are just, you know, they're in tears because they're just beside themselves, don't know what to do. So I always seem to be the oldest and have the oldest child. So I'm sort of like, it'll be okay, you know, just take a breath and slow down. You know, it's not, you don't have to do something right away. It all sort of does work out.
It can be quite
stressful.
I think expats in general get very anxious about finding the right school and the best that they can give and doing the best. And I loved your attitude because you were sort of like, well, I just figured we'd get here and we'd work it out when we got here. Yeah. And that, you know, you had a very... Where did that come from?
I've just learnt to be... I wasn't like this always. I think I just learnt to be more adaptable now because coming from all of this and having Jasper, my whole aim for him now is just to have a great life. So I'm not so pedantic about all those other little details now. So I think so long as he's happy, I'm quite happy.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have to be the right school. It has to be a school where he feels comfortable.
Yeah.
So, we started him in a special needs school here, and it wasn't working for him socially. Academically, it was meeting his needs, but just socially, it wasn't meeting his needs. So we just went and looked for other schools. And so now he's started in a new school just a week ago.
Yeah.
And he's very happy. So I think, and it doesn't really matter. I mean, I guess Jasper's at a primary school age, but even if he were older, I think for him, because I'm not really pedantic about the academics.
Yes.
And having a child with, I've got one child that is very academic and one that's not, it's just taught me, I guess, to not sweat the small stuff, I suppose.
Yeah.
I think we all come with I've worked in schools, and I think education now, I think we get so stressed about education of our children.
Yes.
And I see all the anxiety with parents about schools that their kids are going to, grades that they're getting, and worrying that their whole future is going to be decided by these few years in school.
Yes, yeah.
And I just question it all the time. And I think, I just question the whole education system, really, what we're teaching these kids and whether we're actually giving them the right skills. And sometimes I think Jasper is getting better skills and life skills than my oldest son, you know. I think he will cope better actually in the world.
And what advice would you give? Because there will be someone out there now who's researching their expat adventure, who's terrified that their child with special needs is, not going to get what they need. What would you say to them?
Well, I think you've got to do what feels right for you, because, I mean, as a parent with child with special needs, you go through a lot of guilt.
Right.
And there's guilt from day one till, I think, probably till the end. because like I said before, people always question why are you doing something. I mean, we question everything. Have I made the right move for this child or whatever? I know you do that with all your children, and people always say that, but you're more responsible for this one because they need you more.
Yes.
They can't make those decisions by themselves. But I think if you're researching here and you think you're not going to get what you need for your child, don't come.
Right.
Do you know, I mean, I really think that, especially if you're young, I wouldn't sort of, because you're just going to get here and you're just not going to be happy. You're going to feel that you haven't done the right thing. I mean, I went through with Isabel, we did every early intervention thing you could do, everything. I feel like I've done everything that I could have possibly done when she was young. Mm. But I still feel maybe if I'd done a little bit more homework, you know what I mean? Yeah. We might have, you know. Yeah. So I think if just give yourself every opportunity to do what feels right for your family, but also remember that they're just part of your family. You've got other children as well. You know, I think it's really important people forget about siblings.
Yeah, it's trying to normalise the situation sometimes. I think probably you get so focused on the child with the disability that it can sort of take your life over a little bit. And then certainly in the early years, it's like that because you're just trying to give so much to this child.
Yeah.
But then it can be at the expense of your other children and the rest of your family.
Mm.
So it's just trying to put it all into check and balance and trying to normalise it and just live as a family.
Yeah.
So I think coming here for me, I get to spend a lot more time with my boys, which is great. So I can actually do the homework with Jasper. I can sit and do the reader, whereas in Australia, you know, I was working. We were both working, so you've got very limited time to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually find it, for the age that Jasper is now, a lot easier to be here because I've got more time. So I'm calmer. I can spend time sitting and doing the reader, and I'm not rushing him at breakfast time,
you know,
before we go to work or whatever to do a reader. So for me, I think it's been a very good move.
I think it's easier when they're a bit older, when they're in, you know, when they're young, and there's a few sort of services, the early intervention services, not as much as...
Yes, it's quite scary when you've got a young kid.
I think when they're a bit older and if you've got them into a school and they're sort of, you know, finding their own way there, then I think it's a lot easier.
But I think you've got to know your child before you come. So if you're in those early stages and you don't really know what your child needs, it can be quite overwhelming. I think if you've got a pretty good idea about what they need, then you can, and you can source it then when you get here.
It's also incredibly expensive.
Right.
Yes.
Is another thing. I mean, we're sort of lucky at Isabel School, everything is included. But I know people that are paying like school fees of say whatever, I don't know, $60,000 a year for a school, and paying an extra $10,000 per month on top of that for therapies.
Good Lord. And things are like we that. Talking in Kateria?
Yes.
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 Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So for some people
it can. So you do have to. You have to check that you can get what you need in your. You know, that's still affordable as well, because you can pretty much get anything here if you're willing to pay for it.
And have you found that in your travels of going to different countries that the big, you know, super schools just do not even entertain the idea of taking special needs?
Pretty much. And I find it's all about
their grades. It's all about how good they are and things like that. And, you know, a child with special needs is never going to do that for them. And it is. It's more about that sort of thing.
Yeah, they can really pick and choose the top students to maintain their grade level, you know, or their results.
Yeah.
So they're not going to take a child that's not performing at a certain level.
But that's like anyone here. I mean, you know, some people, they, you know, when they're testing them at four to get into a school, I think that is absolutely absurd. But and then, you know, if your child at four doesn't get accepted into a school and there's, you know, there's nothing wrong with them, or, you know, there's no sort of special needs, and you just, I mean, that must be awful.
I know.
So, I mean, I think that's, I think it's really harsh on the kids here.
The ratio of special needs children in the expat world is a lot smaller because obviously people probably do shy away from it because they're scared of making the move. So do you find that you sort of stand out a bit more or that people don't have the same understanding as they would have? Yeah. And was that a good thing when you went back to Australia for those years? Did you feel better about it that you didn't stand out so much?
Oh, yeah, I must admit, I went back to Australia and it was easy.
Yes.
Whereas here, it is, I mean, and people here, you know, different cultures are very different as well. You'll find that, I mean, I must admit that, like, the Filipinos are always so lovely to Isabel. Like, if we're somewhere and she's, you know, helping me do the shopping or, you know, taking the vegetables up to be labelled or something like that, they're so lovely and accepting of her and, you know, want to talk to her and, you know, everything like that. And I think here, you know, I find that we'll be somewhere and people, you know, will just blatantly stare and, you know, there's just that, not that, that knowledge.
Yeah, I think, you know, in the Middle East as a whole, disability has sort of been shunned.
Yes.
You know, or, and it's been hidden. It's been hidden. So and you don't see a lot of people with disability at the malls or anything because you they're generally at home.
Mm. Yeah.
And they don't go out. So there's not that inclusive. So so that is really interesting. But it is changing, you know. We've seen quite a bit of change even from 10 years ago to now. So it's it's definitely getting there, and you know, they've got more inclusion policies in their own schools. So, you know, if you're a Qatari national, their schools are inclusive.
Yeah.
And the same in the UAE, their schools are inclusive for locals. So all the schools have now been equipped and they're training their teachers in additional needs. So I think, you know, it's definitely, I mean, they're definitely
But it's only, learning. I mean, it's only a very young country. Think of how old is Australia, how old is the UK, how old is America. And they're still... got a lot to learn, really.
Yes. About, they're doing well for a short period of time.
For a young country, they are.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing, we sort of forget they've only been, you know, like, is it, what is it, 30, 40 years, I think?
Yes, because, I mean, even in Australia, they get it wrong. You know, you hear reports all the time about children, how children are being treated in schools, like an autistic boy in Canberra was... you know, left in a cage. Yeah. That was the way that the principal chose to deal with his, you know, rages. So, I mean, nobody gets it right.
Do you know what? These two women, I think, for anyone else that's listening there, any other mums that might be going through this with maybe young toddlers, these two ladies are going to give them the confidence, I think, to keep on going. Because I think I can't say how I would be, but I think my initial reaction would be, we'll just run back home.
Yes, yeah.
Or we won't come. We won't do this. We're not going to do this expat life.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think listening to their stories, and they've gone back home and they've come back, and I think they're going to give other women and other families a lot of confidence to know that you can pack up and go.
Yeah, I agree. And that's what I loved about Tash when I met her, was her relaxed attitude about it. And I think, you know, it's kind of, you know, when people say to me about, oh, I can't believe you're having your treatment here, and people say to them, I can't believe you brought your child here.
Yeah.
I think the thing is, I was fine because I'd gone and got my head straight at home, and I knew about, you know, well, I've got an oncologist, I know the treatment I have. They'd both gone home, got themselves into the system, learned what their child's needs were, and then they felt fine to go on and tackle it on
As Tasha says, she's got the skills and got the tools now, so she can carry on and keep, and that she's got the support back home, that she can email the teachers and therapists and what have you. I thought,
And didn't they teach you too that we just all need to relax a bit about our kids' education?
Absolutely. Do you know what the other big thing was? Diversity. I always go on about how I'm so happy that Sadie's sitting in a classroom with friends from all different nationalities.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until we were home this summer that I realised we were at the zoo in Canberra, and some special needs students came into the cafeteria where we were sitting.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw the look on Sadie's face what she just didn't,
she
couldn't
comprehend.
She hadn't seen it. And I had to do that look of, don't ask any loud questions right now, we're going to have a conversation, because she was fascinated.
Yeah.
And it's true, she doesn't see that on a day to day. There is no diversity, where she probably would have had that had she been at school.
So we give them international diversity, but we don't give them diversity in people.
And I think when we first moved to Abu Dhabi, the one thing that Matt and I really did notice was that you didn't see people with special needs.
No, or people so much with disabilities.
Yeah, you don't.
You just don't.
And when we moved to Doha, we actually noticed that we saw, especially in the local community, we saw more people with physical disabilities. And Matt working in construction, it's his big thing when we go into buildings, and he's like, well, this is not right. This is not fit for wheelchair. There's no wheelchair access here.
Yeah.
Where there are things that he's, you know, he crosses every I.
Yes.
Sorry, crosses every T, dots every I.
Yeah.
And then he comes to countries like this, he's like, this is not accessible for people with disabilities.
Do you know, a woman in the Arab world told me once, and I thought this was something I had never considered, that if you have a disability, if you've had a child with a disability, or say your mother's had breast cancer, or there's been something within your family that shows some genetic fault, that the reason you would keep that a secret is because if you're trying to marry off people and they know that you have that genetic fault within your family, you may not be as attractive as an offer.
Wow.
Now, I'm not going to say that that's true because that's one person's opinion that they've told me.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something that has stuck with me that I remember saying to her, oh, so basically your stock price went down. Do you know, like you suddenly didn't become as good. Oh, but her mother did have breast cancer and, you know, her sister did have that child. And I hadn't ever thought about it, that if someone's looking at you as a breeding option.
Yes, yes.
They want a thoroughbred.
Yeah, yeah.
And, yeah, just an amazing thought, isn't it? Yeah.
And the other thing that I liked that both Tash and Kaylee said was, it's about the whole family. So the move has to be what's right, I guess, for the majority.
Yeah.
You know, it can't be about one person. Yeah, yeah. And I think that's the same with any expat family, don't you think?
Yeah, because you think,
can't move just because he's going to love that job, but you're living in a country where you're going to be unsafe.
Kind of like when one child's naughty and everyone gets sent to bed. And you go, oh, we had to go home because Sally needed to go to a special school.
Yeah.
And the kid that was very happy there is saying,
well, what about me?
Yeah. What about me? I wanted to stay where I was. Yes, and you should be thinking about the whole family what's best. And what I thought was fascinating with Kelly too was she was saying with her little girl, it's all about life skills now. She's done everything she can and now it's about how can you function and live on your own, and she can learn those skills just as well in the expat world as she can
absolutely
at home.
If not more so because they're traveling.
Yeah,
she's meeting people that don't speak English as a first language, so there's probably more opportunities for life skills in an expat community as maybe opposed to back home.
Yeah. All right. Well, I thought those ladies were fantastic.
Yes, thank you very much.
It was really, really interesting. And I wanted to say thank you to them both for agreeing, because I really did trap them on the spot when they were saying, and I said, oh, will you be on the podcast? Because I just thought it's such an interesting topic. And we see it. We see people go home all the time and especially people with little children. And it is incredibly sad because you'll see the happiness of the new baby arriving and then the diagnosis and the, well, we're going to have to go home because we need to give our child.
And I think, as these two ladies have shown, that doesn't have to be the case.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so Sez, we should probably explain your voice.
So it's the day after the World Cup finals and Australia lost. And I'm not going to say a bad word, but I'm a rugby nut.
You are.
I'm married to an ex-rugby player. We live and breathe it. And I was, so that's why I sound, do I sound sexy or do I just sound foul?
Sexy.
Okay, thanks. Definitely. You're just saying that. So, yes, I was doing a lot of screaming at the TV last night.
It was so sad, wasn't it? Like, it looked like they were going to come back.
I know, the first half was crap, but then the second half, I'm like, we've got this, we've got this. And then we didn't.
Yeah.
But, you know, New Zealand were very, very good, I think, in accepting the World Cup. Although not so many people on Facebook, I'll have you know. The nastiness has started.
Oh, the nastiness
and
did
I hate that.
I didn't hate that. Do you know what I found really interesting is everyone today is going on about Sonny Bill Williams handing over his
After that kid was king hit by the security guard.
Yeah.
Was there a need for, like, they could have just grabbed his arm.
But do you know what I think?
His little boy.
Do you know what I find interesting is he wasn't so little. He was 14.
Was he?
Yes. And Sonny Bill says in the interview, you know, he was a little boy of 7 or 8 and I just felt the security guard took him out. But then when you read the story about the boy, he's 14. And, you know, I'm trying to think, if I was at the World Cup with my 12-year-old son and he jumped the barrier and ran,
I'd be a little bit angry.
I think I'd be very cross with him. Yeah. And I think I would have said to Sonny Bill, you give that medal back to Sonny Bill because you're a very naughty boy for jumping over the thing. Yeah. But Sonny Bill does no wrong. We all know that. Mm. He's bent
except
down
for, you know, he changes codes every 5 years. But anyway, whatevs.
But yeah,
pick a sport, Sonny Bill. I'm still a bit bitter.
Anyway, so yes, you've got the voice. But Sez, what are your social media picks for this week?
Okay, so I'm a huge fan of Adele, the singer Adele.
Yes.
And she's back
rather than the computer Adele.
Oh my god. Boom boom. So she's back. She's been away for a couple of years. She's back with a fabulous new single called Hello. I'll put a link to the YouTube clip. I think everyone's seen the film clip, but just in case you haven't, I'll put it on the website. It's a really beautiful film clip, and it's all, like, all of her past albums have all been about breaking up and they're very sad. And but this one, she says, is more about making up.
Oh, I love
it. And this song is about that.
Have you seen the Ellen clip of her doing Hello? And
no, not yet.
And it's also got Lionel Richie.
When you hear the song, the first time I heard the song, yeah. I was having the whole Lionel Richie moment in my head.
That's very cute. Maybe we'll put the YouTube one of that.
Okay, I'll find that as well. Yes. And then moving on to a podcast, it's called The Frame, and it's hosted by LA film writer John Horn, and it's all different interviews with people from film, TV, art, music. He's interviewed George Clooney, if you're into George, that's a really good interview. But my favourite is episode 6, where he interviews the writers of the Suffragette movie, which I don't think they'll show it here.
You don't think they'll throw the suffrage yet?
Well, it's not a scary movie and it's not action film, is it? Maybe. And it's women fighting for their rights, so go down like a lead balloon here. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing the film, and the interview was fantastic with the writers of the film.
Yes, and I think I watched the women on Graham Norton. I think it was Meryl Streep was on Graham Norton with... beautiful little what is her name?
Carrie Mulligan.
Okay. So, yes, she was on Graham Norton as well, and they were very, very good.
Oh, excellent.
Yes. So I'm doing something different for the podcast today. Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you what not to listen to, because I went in search of a couple of podcasts, and I just thought, no, I think this is just as much of a service to save people's time as it was. So I really wanted to find and this was back when I was doing the chemo a few weeks ago, a meditation kind of go to sleep one, because you kind of get very achy and it's hard to go to sleep. So I downloaded a top rating, Sleep With Me, it's called, and it was definitely in the top 10 of podcasts.
No.
And I'm always quite amazed by the top 100,
can I just say sometimes when I look at, like, we're up there on the charts. We had the number one episode this week with travel and places or what have you. But some of those people that make the top 20, I'm not quite sure how they get there.
They slept with someone at
Again, I'm sounding bitter.
They've got the naked pictures of someone high in iTunes, yes. Anyway, it's called Sleep With Me, and it's basically one man, and the idea is he's going to put you to sleep with his conversational kind of meditation. Oh. Now, the thing is...
sounds a bit weird.
I just found myself going, what? What? Why are you?
So what does he talk to you about?
Well, I think the idea is he bores you to tears and you go to sleep. But I just wasn't.
Imagine being that man. Yes. What do you do? I am so boring. I send people to sleep.
Well, he talks in kind of this monotone, but he's also, you can tell, he's a bit of a hippie Californian kind of guy. So yeah, I wouldn't recommend that. But if anyone does have a great meditational podcast or sleep inducing podcast. Mm-hmm. Tell me about it. And the other one I thought was a complete rip-off was, do you have the Shazam?
I love Shazam. Yeah, I always use Shazam.
And they have the top 20 Shazam podcast. And I thought, oh, well, this would be great. They're going to play the top 20 Shazamable things. No, but no one is. It's like listening to, you know, the top 40 without the music, just the blah, blah, blah in between. So it's basically... they'll say, oh, you know, at number 19, we've got blah, 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 blah. Oh. And they'll say a bit about that person. And, you know, when you're listening to that on the radio, you're thinking, yeah, hurry up and just play the song. So it's basically that hurry up and play the song.
But no song. Oh, Shazam.
So, yeah, give that one a miss.
And if anyone doesn't know what Shazam is an app that you can have on your phone. So, you know, when you're in the car and you're listening to a song, you're like, who sings that? Or what's this song called?
I love this song.
You press Shazam and it tells you who it is.
And then you can automatically download
Yes, you can.
Right there and then. And then I just had one little Facebook tip, because I did this yesterday and someone watched me do it and said, I didn't know you could do that. And that is saving posts for later that you want to read.
I figured that out last week.
Yes. So I saw it, but
I never knew where it went.
Yeah.
But if you're on your laptop.
Yes, it's in your little left-hand column.
Yeah.
So basically, say you're reading through Facebook and you see four great articles in a row or a fantastic video that you want to watch, but it's not an appropriate time to watch it or do it or whatever, you can save it. And you do that by going into the right-hand column of the article or the video or whatever, the little drop down arrow.
Yeah, it's like, little arrow.
And that little arrow is the same one you push if you want to
unfollow that person's post or hide that person's post, but you'll see there's a little thing that says save, and you can save it. And I do it for work, because at work we have to save certain things we see on Facebook and then talk about it all at the end of the week. And it's fantastic.
I've started doing it for the podcast.
Yes.
Like when I see things and I've gone, oh, that'd be great for the podcast, and then I forget all about it or I can't remember where I saw it.
All the time.
Save for later.
Yeah, like I'll see great videos, but I'll be sitting somewhere where it's not really the appropriate time to watch a video now.
NSFW.
Yes, NSFW.
Took me forever to work out what that meant. Had to Google it.
Okay, so that's mine. So I think that's us done.
Yes,
Sis.
Yes.
So I
next week is our off week.
Next week's our chemo week. I go in on Wednesday, so we're going to have next week off.
Yep.
But we'll be back the following week
with a fun episode.
It'll be really fun.
Yep.
And we're talking to a new an expat couple who have met, dated, got engaged, and now going to get married. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about how that looks as an expat.
I can't wait for that one.
Yep, me too.
And they're great. Charismatic, the both of them.
They are. Yeah, they're fantastic.
It'll be a fun episode.
Yes. All right, Sez.
We'll see you next week.
No. See you the week after
next. We'll see you in a couple of weeks. Bye.
Bye.